ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, Text 7. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Creator of the Universe, you are our Mother, Well-Wisher, Lord, Father, Spiritual Master, and Worshipable Deity. By following Your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Purport. The all-good personality of Godhead, being the creator of the universe, also plans for the good of all good living beings. The good living beings are advised. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O creator of the universe, you are our mother, Well-Wisher, Lord, Father, Spiritual Master, and Worshipable Deity. By following your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Purport. The all-good personality of Godhead, being the creator of the universe, also plans for the good of all good living beings. The good living beings are advised by the Lord to follow His good advice. And by doing so, they become successful in all spheres of life. There is no need to worship any deity but the Lord. The Lord is all-powerful, and if He is satisfied by our obedience unto His lotus feet, He is competent to bestow upon us all kinds of blessings for the successful execution of both our material and spiritual lives. For attaining spiritual existence, the human form is a chance for all to understand our eternal relation with God. Our relation with Him is eternal. It can neither be broken nor vanquished. It may be forgotten for some time, for the time being, but it can be revived also by the grace of the Lord. If we follow His injunctions, which are revealed in scriptures of all times and all places. Bhavaya nas tvam bhava vishva bhavana tvam eva matata saritpati pata tvam sadgurur na paramam chedaivatam yasyanu vritya kritino babu vima. O Creator of the Universe, you are a Mother, Well-Wisher, Lord, Father, Spiritual Master, and Worshipful Deity. By following your footsteps, we have become successful in every respect. We pray, therefore, that you continue to bless us with your mercy. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vidhanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Siddharane Kasmat Chitena Namarena Mahatma Gariya Se Brahmanopyudi Karatre Ananta Devesha Jiganivasa Tat Aksharam Sarasat Tat Param Yat. So this is Arjuna's prayers in the Bhagavad Gita, 11th chapter. Kasmat Chitena Namarena Mahatma. O great one who stands even above Brahma. Kasmachitena namarena mahatma gariyase brahmanopyuti karatre. You are the original creator. Ananta devesha. You have unlimited forms. Ananta devesha jagat. Jaganivaso. You are the shelter of the whole universe. Tat aksharam sadasat tat param yat. You are beyond the fallible and infallible, and you're the greatest. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna gives Krishna many qualifications. And even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna himself says, Pitahamasa jagato mata data pitamaha vedyam pavitramam kara rik samayajra evacha. That I am the father, Pitaham asa jagato, of the whole universe. Mata, I am the mother, as explained here. Data, the maintainer. Pitamaha, and the great-grandfather. Vedyam, I am what's knowable. Pavitram, I am the purifier. Vedyam Pavitram Omkara, and I am also the syllable Om. Rik Sama, and Yajra Eva Cha, and I am the Rik, the Sama, and the Yajra Vedas. So Krishna gives himself a lot of credit in Bhagavad Gita. And also Arjuna gives Krishna a lot of credit. The difference is that the conditioned soul gives Krishna no credit. When Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parichaja Mame Kam Sharanam Braja, give up everything and surrender to me, the conditioned soul thinks that this is too much. Why is he so demanding? Why doesn't he try to become a little bit more relaxed and try to become a little more friendly towards people and try to accommodate people's desires? Why is he so demanding? What psychological problems does he have that he's demanding everything from everyone? There must be something psychologically wrong with him. He's so insecure. He wants everything. So people think like that Krishna is an ordinary conditioned soul like we are, and maybe a little bit, he just as we're demanding, so he's more demanding. But this is called Atmanam Manyate Jagat, that we think others to be just like our own self because we have a certain idea, a certain mentality. Therefore, we think Krishna's mentality is the same as ours. Therefore, when Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto, Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru, Mame Vaishasi, Yuktaivam Atmanam Matparayanaha, that one should always think of Krishna. So commentators, even Prabhupada points out that scholars, even the former president of India, who is supposed to be a big scholar, when he hears Krishna saying, always think of me, he says, actually, what Krishna really means is that you shouldn't really think of Krishna, but Krishna is saying to think of the unborn within Krishna. In other words, Krishna is not really, he's just an instrument for Brahman. And therefore, when he's saying, think of me, he really is, Brahman is speaking through Krishna, because otherwise it would be hard to hear Brahman. So Brahman has come as Krishna, and now we should think of Brahman, and through Krishna. So, this is called mental speculation, that the commentator is thinking that Krishna, he's saying he's God, but it's only because he has psychological problems, insecurity. But actually we know that really, when you really get deeper into Krishna, then you'll find out that he's not God, that the Brahman within him is God. So, as I've pointed out before, that if Krishna it's obvious in Bhagavad Gita in many places that Krishna is stating that he's God. No one can deny the fact that Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, that everything is coming from it. Only God can say that. An ordinary conditioned soul cannot say, everything comes from it. Or Madak Parataram Nanyat, Kinchit Asti Dhananjaya, that all things are resting on me, just like pearls are strung in a thread. O conqueror of the enemies, Arjuna, there's no truth superior to me, all things are resting on me, just like pearls are strung in a thread. So that's a big statement. Someone may say like that, but then if you ask them, well, that's very good, well, maybe you can, you know, do something to show us how everything is based on you. Maybe you can increase the temperature around 5 degrees, and that way we can have a good, you know, it'd be a nice sunny day today. And then everyone would be very impressed that you're a god. But no, such persons, they can't even increase the temperature 1 degree, or even a fraction of a degree. They can't do anything. They may be able to do something, but they can create a speck of gold. But if you ask them, that's very good. Well, why don't you create a gold mine and we'll share it? But that they can't do. But But Krishna says, Matak paratram nanya, kinchit asti dananjaya, mayi sarvam idam prautam, sutre mani gana iva, that I am, O conqueror of enemies, O conqueror of wealth, dananjaya, there's no true superior to me, all things are resting on me, just like pearls are strung in a thread. So if Krishna is wrong, and he's actually not God, then he's speaking nonsense. All Bhagavad Gita is all folk centered around the fact that Krishna is God. Yatra yogeshra Krishna, yatra parata dhanuradhara, tatra shir vijayo putir dhruva nitir matir mama. Wherever there is Krishna, who's yoga ishvara, the master of all mystics. So, it seems that Sanjaya thinks Krishna is God, Krishna thinks he's God, Arjuna thinks he's God, and if the commentators say that they're all fools, then what is it? Then the Bhagavad Gita is useless. It's a waste of time to read it, because the speaker is wrong, the person he's listening to is listening to what he's saying is wrong, the person that's hearing the conversation is wrong, they're all wrong. Therefore, the whole book is wrong. If Krishna is not God, therefore, someone who's writing a commentary on a useless book, what is the value of his commentary? It's useless. If the Bhagavad Gita is useless, then a commentary on a useless book is also useless. And anyone who reads a useless commentary on a useless book is wasting his time. He's also useless. So if one reads a commentary on someone who doesn't believe that Krishna is God, then he's just wasting his time. So at least theoretically one has to try to understand from Krishna's point of view. He may be egotistical or whatever, but if we want to study Bhagavad Gita, then we have to try to understand it from his point of view or from someone who's trying to explain his point of view. We may accept or not accept the fact that Krishna is God, but that's up to us. But at least that's what we should recognize. That's what the Bhagavad Gita is all about. The fact that Krishna is stating he's God, and a valid commentary on the Bhagavad Gita has to also explain that Krishna is God. And one who's going to read the Bhagavad Gita has to at least try to understand whether or not Krishna is God. That's called open mind. So here it says that Krishna is God. And not only Krishna is God, but everyone has a relationship with him. So Krishna has explained that relationship in Bhagavad Gita. For instance, he says, Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto matak smritir jnanam apohanam cha. That I am in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So a little use of our intelligence, we can see, for instance, a little exercise, we can see that I'm not my body. That my body is changing, and that myself within the body, I'm the same person. Although this personality that I may have now, external personality, is not my original or eternal personality, because that personality that I'm identifying with is on a subtle material platform. But there's a deeper personality who's aware, a deeper person who's aware of all these changes of moods and personalities and understandings and experiences coming from the material platform. So, that depends upon our intelligence to perceive that. One who has no intelligence, they're called animal. One who's just like an animal, he cannot perceive the fact that there's a difference between his body and himself. He may have many degrees and many honors and many prestigious positions within society, but according to the Vedic literature at least, that one who cannot perceive the difference between oneself and the body, he's called Eva Gokara, a go or a cow or an ass. Not that, as I said before, the Bhagavatam is criticizing cows and asses, because the cows are considered to be one of the mothers. But the cow, if you ask the cow, who are you? The cow will say, I'm a cow. The cow identifies itself with the body, and so does an ass. And similarly, one who identifies himself in the body, his spiritual intelligence, at least, is not progressed beyond that of a cow or an ass. He may be able to manipulate the material world better than a cow or an ass can, but at least according to the Vedic literature, that's not the sign of a progressed or an advanced human being. One who can control more than someone else. Yeah. So, this ability to discriminate between oneself and the body depends upon the quality of one's intelligence. And similarly, when one can see beyond that and can see that within my body, there's a source of intelligence who's directing me, just like a teacher directs a student or a father directs a son. That we don't have independent intelligence. For instance, if I want to touch the microphone, that if the intelligence is supplied to me, I can do it very easily. But if the intelligence is not supplied to me due to some material circumstances, then I may try to touch the microphone by putting my hand behind my neck instead of directly touching it, because I don't have the intelligence how to properly do it or most easily do it. So that intelligence is not, I'm not the origin of the intelligence, I'm dependent upon the intelligence in all my activities of seeing, thinking, feeling, or moving. So that all-pervading intelligence, because every living entity, whether it be an ant or a human being, to some degree has intelligence. And the more advanced one is, then that previous intelligence is assumed to be included within the more advanced form. So the human being, he should have not only the intelligence that the ant has, but he should also have more advanced intelligence, such as the ability to see oneself as a spiritual being and to recognize that there's another person who's supplying everyone with intelligence, and he's the super soul. So that idea of the super soul being in everyone's heart, giving everyone intelligence, is not some sectarian idea. It is not a Hindu philosophy or the Hare Krishna movement's philosophy. It's reality. And any philosophy or scripture that agrees with that, that's religious or dharmic, and any religion or philosophy that disagrees with that is called avidya or ignorance. And that super soul, as explains in the Vedic literature, his activity, that is sensing the desires of living entities and supplying, making the arrangements through the material energy to supply their desires and giving them the intelligence what to do in order to fulfill their desires, that's not the only function, according to the scriptures, of what the Supreme Lord is. He's not simply an order carrier, he's ultimately within a different realm, and in that realm he enjoys his relationships with his unlimited liberated companions, such as himself, who are just like himself. So according to Bhagavad Gita, dvavimo purusho loke shara akshara eva cha sarva bhutani kutasto shara uchite. There are two kinds of created beings in this world, the fallible and the infallible. That in the spiritual world everyone is fallible, and in this material world everyone is called, or here in the material world everyone is called fallible, and in the spiritual world everyone is called infallible. So that fallible and infallible means that Krishna is a person, that he has his desire, and here it says that his desire is all good, because he's all good. Therefore, anyone who agrees with him also becomes good. And anyone who disagrees with him, since he's absolutely good, they must become bad. It's just, you can think about it logically. In other words, Krishna, he's absolutely good, therefore anything different from what Krishna wants must be bad. We may not like that, people don't like that. They don't generally take Krishna's standard as the standard for good. People think, well, there are so many good people in the world. We've heard that before, right? There are so many good people. But actually, according to the standard Bhagavad Gita, they're all bad. The so-called good people in this material world are actually bad. Why? Because they don't agree with Krishna. Now they may agree with Krishna to a certain extent, and to whatever extent they agree with Krishna, they become good, and to whatever extent they disagree with him, they're bad. But ultimately, because they don't agree with Krishna, they don't even believe in Krishna, or even if they believe in Krishna, they think, well, Krishna is sometimes wrong, therefore they're not good. So we may not like that, but that's up to us. Everyone has their personal decision, what they agree to accept or what they don't accept. But at least according to Krishna, anyone who doesn't accept that, they become bad. They're put into the Kshara category, or fallible, and what they're doing is neither good for themselves nor good for anyone else. Of course, they may be doing something that in the relative consideration may be considered to be good. For instance, to give charity to the poor may be, in some people's estimation, a good activity, and even in the Vedic literature it's recommended as a good activity. But ultimately it's bad. Why is it bad? Because the very material existence is bad. The soul, his original existence is unlimited bliss, unlimited pleasure forever. Ever increasingly finding out how more and more wonderful Krishna and his devotees are. Therefore, anything besides that is actually bad. To give in charity to the poor and the next life go to the heavenly planets may be relatively good, but that's compared to in the jail that the prisoner may be awarded for his good conduct a better cell. He may get a color TV instead of a black and white TV. He might get a free, you know, meal coupon for the feast on Sunday, whatever. But ultimately, he's in jail. Ultimately, to go from a class C or B prisoner to a class A prisoner is not the goal of life. The goal of life is to get out of the prison and to live a normal life outside the prison. So similarly, anything in this material world done, good or bad, is ultimately bad. The only thing good is to do something in Krishna consciousness, which is one's normal activity. And this is the intelligence that Krishna tries to give for the benefit of all the living entities. It is not that if the living entities want to stay here in the material world and Krishna makes the arrangements for him, then he's going to suffer, that Krishna is going to be trapped because he's in their heart, just like Hiranyakashipu. He thought that, actually, where is this Krishna? So he looked all over the universe, and of course Krishna went into his heart because he knew that the only place that Hiranyakashipu wouldn't look for him would be within his heart. So later on, Kamsa, he mentioned, because he's more or less in the same party as Hiranyakashipu, he's saying that Lord Vishnu, he's entered into everyone's heart. Now he's stuck there. And he can't come out. So we don't have to worry about him. So the demons, they may think that the Supreme Lord, he's stuck in everyone's heart. He can't do anyone any harm anymore. He's just kind of stuck there. And Brahma, he's in the meditating with Lord Shiva. So we don't have to worry about them because they really have nothing to do with us or anyone else. But the fact is that Krishna is in everyone's heart, although the demons may not want to perceive him there. But ultimately, he's the one who's judging everything, controlling everything. Although, whether or not we accept him, whether or not we obey him, he's not going to become bewildered. He's not going to sit in our heart and start crying, my dear beloved spirit soul has left me. He's not going to do that. Nor is if we commit sinful activities, he's not going to suffer. He may feel a little disappointed that this foolish living entity has chosen to remain suffering in the material world. In that way, he'll be a little disappointed, but he doesn't experience the same kind of suffering that we go through. It's up to us whether or not we want to become Krishna conscious. If we become Krishna conscious, it's for our benefit. So Krishna comes and demands that everyone surrenders. If he would have said, my dear living entities, you know, I'm not really so sure, but I was just thinking the other night it might be a good idea. So if you like, surrender. If not, you know, do whatever you feel like, because that's the new philosophy. No, Krishna says, absolutely, surrender to me, because I know everything. And if you surrender to me and follow my instructions, then you'll be benefited. And if you go 1 inch, 1 millimeter beyond my instructions, or you neglect my instructions, then everything you're doing is going to be a failure. So Krishna knows reality. We can't blame him for it. He was born God. Can't criticize him. Why did he become God? You know, this is unfair. Why doesn't he just give up some of his power, just, you know, distribute it, be more fair and democratic about it? No, Krishna does that. He empowers all living entities according to their ability to, their capacity and their merit to accept such empowerment. But Krishna is God forever. And Krishna doesn't want to give up being God, because Krishna's being God is all good for everyone. It's good for him and it's good for everyone else. Just like if you ask the root of a tree, why did you take the position of being a root? Why don't you give the position to one of the leaves or branches? What can the root do? Such a foolish question. There has to be a root. Everything can't just be a leaf and branch. A leaf and a branch can't be the root, and the root can't be the leaf and the branch. That everyone has their position, so Krishna has his position as God. He's quite happy with it, and most of the living entities are happy with it too. But if we're not happy with it, then Krishna has given us the facility to do something else, to imagine something else, but that doesn't mean that that's reality, what we're speculating and imagining. So here it says, Ye me matamidam nityam anutishanti manava sharavantano suyanto mutante tipi karma bi. Krishna says that those who follow my injunctions without envy become free from sinful reactions by the bondage of fruitive activities. That even though one may not be able to perfectly follow Krishna's injunctions, but if one without envy tries to follow them sincerely, then Krishna will become pleased and help the living entity make progress. Then he says, Ye tve tarabhyusuyanto anutishne mematam sarva jnana vimudamstam vidinashtana chetasaha. For those who reject my injunctions and out of envy and do not follow them become bereft of all knowledge and be fooled to ignorance and bondage. So that is our choice. We can reject that we don't agree, and my mother doesn't agree, and so my friends don't agree, and I read a book that didn't agree, so I don't agree either. We can do that, but then we have to take the consequences too, such as being befooled and doomed to ignorance and bondage. So people might say, well, I don't believe that, but I believe it. And at least within our authorities that we accept, they believe it. So if someone doesn't believe it, it's up to them. If someone believes that living in a material body is a blissful, eternal experience, and that no one should criticize it, it's a divine experience, well, that's up to them. And if someone sees that there is something beyond that, that's also there. That's also coming from Krishna. Krishna is giving them that mercy to see that. We may believe in it, we may not believe in it. Just as a blind person may believe in the sun or may not believe in the sun, but that doesn't mean that the sun is going to get any less, you know, its light from the sun is going to get any less strong because of our personal belief or disbelief in it. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
So Krishna is supplying the intelligence by which we can understand him, but you have to be intelligent in order. So if you act in devotional service, Krishna gives you the intelligence, but you have to be intelligent in order to act in devotional service.
Yeah, therefore most people don't act in devotional service because they're not very intelligent. So Krishna says, Yesham antakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanva mohanirmukdva bhajante mam dridavrataha. Now those who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful reactions are completely eradicated, and are free from the duality of delusion, engage in my devotional service with determination. So those who are sinful, those who are deceitful, those who are atheistic, those who are, what was the other? Foolish. They don't generally take to devotional service. They have no faith in devotional service. Therefore, generally the Vedic literature starts with trying to convince the living entity to at least regulate his activities a little bit. The idea of God being the supreme person and Goloka Vrindavan playing on a flute is not introduced in the beginning of the Vedic literature, nor is even the concept of Narayan introduced. Generally, very elementary concepts are introduced so that people become inspired at least to regulate their sinful activities. And then as they see the value of regulation, then they may be inspired to give up sinful activities and take to pious activities for advancement of material life. And as they become inspired by that, they may be inspired to go to the heavenly planets or become liberated. But gradually, as their intelligence becomes purified, they can be introduced to the concept that there is a God and that we're his servant. But that's not in the beginning. Therefore, it is said, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschedyarili siddhaya. Krishna says, and in many thousands of people, hardly one is actually interested in spiritual advancement. So we should not be surprised if there is not people flocking in to hear about Krishna. God is here in the temple, but people don't flock in from everywhere all the time just to see God, because that's not their interest. But Krishna has arranged the material world in such a way as to give everyone some opportunity to make some advancement in the right direction. So although people may not flock in to see God, somehow or another, if they can be introduced to a progressive way of life, then they can be gradually elevated to the platform where they can appreciate God. So therefore it says, which are revealed in the revealed scriptures of all times and all places. So we accept so many other scriptures, anything that will help someone progress in spiritual life, towards spiritual life, we accept, but we don't accept it all as one. We understand, as it says, different strokes for different folks. So what's good for the one person may not, one man's food may be another man's poison. So somehow or another, if people can progress, then that's appreciated, but we don't say it's all one. Ultimately, we say that intelligence, purified intelligence, should come to the platform of appreciating that Krishna is God, and therefore becoming in one in harmony with Krishna, with his desires. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes Prabhupada says that later God is lusty, Krishna is lusty, but it's unlimited lusty. So someone may say, okay, Krishna is natural, but then he is also actually bad.
I don't know, people can say anything. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, there's an argument to defeat it.
Krishna is absolutely bad. Krishna's not absolutely bad. He's absolutely good. Whatever he does is good for everyone. Brings pleasure to everyone. It's for everyone's benefit. We never say Krishna is absolutely bad. Yeah, he's absolute. So he's absolutely good.
Then why isn't he actually bad also?
Why should he be bad? Well, you're bad. You're the part of him who's absolutely bad.
One funny thing happening to me in Amsterdam. I was sitting on a bench, and then one man came sitting next to me, and he had some grapes. And he said, "You want to have some grapes?" And I said, "No, thank you." He said, "Oh, you don't want to take it because it's not offered, huh?" I don't. I said, "Yeah, that has something to do with it." He said, "Well, actually, I'm God." He said, "So they're offered. Here, take the grapes." And then he started saying all kinds of things. "Look, you know, it's now 22 degrees, and this is exactly the temperature I like, and you know." And it was all kinds of nonsense. And then one other man, he walked past and heard it, and he sat next to him, and he said, "I hear what you say. You sound pretty advanced. Can you say some more?" And they start talking all this nonsense. And I mentioned, I said, "Well, you know," I said, "I'm going, you know, you're two gods here." They were really believing. They were really kind of serious about what they were.
Yeah, people must be serious. Otherwise, how are so many living entities in this material world for so long? We weren't serious about it. The difference is that nowadays people aren't embarrassed to say that they're God. Previously they were a little humble about it. Besides that, if Prabhupada said we can say we're God, there's nothing wrong with that. Every living entity is a controller to some degree. People are, you know, unintelligent if they think that they're a supreme God, the Parameshvara. Everyone is Ishvara to some degree, but Krishna is Parameshvara. Of course, when someone says, you know, I created the temperature 22 degrees, you know, obviously they're crazy, that's all. Little, we could say at least they're a little insecure. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Pramanandaya.